Scriptures get real when addressing every issue in our lives, including marital relationships, affection, and sex. Let's talk about that today in the Word. Good morning and welcome back to Today in the Word. Hi, I'm Glenn Schaefer. Thank you for joining us as we're walking through the Scriptures. Today we're in 1 Corinthians chapter 7. We're going to be in the first 8 verses. Paul hits his head on marriage, affection, and sexual relationship, and later on in the chapter, dealing with marriage, even divorce. So he's answering questions of those Corinthians who had written to him. And so he starts here in verse 1 and says, "Now concerning the things of which you wrote to me." So he's going to start this part of the book answering those questions that they've written him. And one of the questions they have is, what do we do if you tell us to flee from sexual immorality? We look at our present culture. We look at the temple where 1,000 prostitutes are gathered and everybody's so used to engaging in sexual relationships outside of marriage, not even having their own husband or own wife. Now they become converts and Christians in this culture. What are we to do? Maybe we're just to abstain from sex altogether, even in marriage. And so they ask him some questions and Paul addresses it. He says, it is good for a man not to touch a woman. In other words, it is true, don't have sexual relationship with a woman. But now he puts it inside of the marriage context that God has formed. So he's taking this pagan culture of people who are coming to Christ who would not have any understanding of the Old Testament, of the law and the prophets, or any instructions of God's order. They may be getting a little bit here and there, not knowing that when God put Adam and Eve together, he created the marriage union, the most holy, sacred, close union on the earth. Spirit, soul, and body. I know most have not thought that way. I'm sure they haven't. They probably came together by having something in common and desire to be together physically in sexual relationship, and now they've come to Christ. That's often the order. God's order, of course, would be together spiritually and then get to know each other and then in marriage have that union together. And so in the marriage, if you pray together, share your lives together, and have no secrets and don't hide anything, and you're joined together, then that physical union is powerful. So they would not have known all of those things. And so Paul just addresses it right up front when he says, yeah, it's true that a man should not have sexual relationship with a woman. Nevertheless, verse 2, nevertheless, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife and let each woman have her own husband. Now, Paul's not just saying because of sexual immorality, that's why you should get married. But he's not denying the reality that within the context of marriage, there is a fulfillment of the sexual drive and union that God has given. Now, that doesn't mean you won't have lustful struggles when you get married. That's not true at all. In fact, many times it increases in a marriage because those sexual lustful thoughts outside of the wholesomeness of marriage is driven from a past life of fantasies and thoughts and self-gratification that does not fit within the marriage because the marriage now is joined together. You're going to see here in this chapter, first with affection, and then there's fruitfulness and there's reward in the sexual union, but it has to have a proper order. So he says, because of sexual immorality, let each man have his own wife. Now it's interesting that he would even have to tell them to have his own wife or a woman to have her own husband, because in their culture, that was not the norm. But he says, let each one have his own wife and each woman have her own husband. And then verse 3 says, let the husband render to his wife affection due her, and likewise also the wife to her husband. Now that word affection, one translation, I believe it's the King James, says do benevolence. You may not know what that means, but it really just means what this verse says is to serve and to be affectionate and kindness toward one another. Notice he puts that first. A marriage without intimacy through affection will not have intimacy through a sexual relationship. It must start there. I know that God has created that for both of us. Now, he says here, for the husband begins first to have affection towards his wife. I think that's because of leadership in the home. But it's also because us men can be driven physically more than we are affectionately if we're not careful. It doesn't mean a man doesn't need affection. In fact, Paul says to Titus, teach the women to be affectionate towards their husbands and their children. I remember reading that going, why would he need to teach women to be affectionate towards their children? Isn't that just what moms are? But not if she has never been nurtured. If she's never grown up with a nurturing mom, if she's never been nurtured, she's not going to know how to nurture. So you can actually learn how to be affectionate. If you're not an affectionate person, don't just take that and go, well, I'm just not an affectionate person. That's just not me. No. As a disciple, we can be affectionate. It's not right for us as husbands to go, well, that's just not me. I'm not affectionate. That's just my wife. No, we're disciples. We are here, according to the scriptures, to be affectionate, rendering kindness, service, focused upon your wife. That's what the scripture means over in Ephesians 5, where it says, for the husband is to nourish his wife, to cherish her, be tender toward her, hold her as value. It is easy for a man to neglect those emotional needs in his wife. And it's also, maybe the wife doesn't realize that the husband needs that affection as well. That tenderness, that kindness, that nurturing. You talk to husbands, they'll tell you they love it when their wives nurture them. Why? Because it's biblical. Wives love it when husbands nurture them. He says, let the husband render to his wife, meaning this is what is due in your marriage. You say, well, that's just not me. Listen, if you're going to be married, there are some responsibilities. And I don't mean that in some kind of harsh way, but that's part of being married. You know, when a guy gets married, he can't just go off and do what he wants to do when he wants to do it. Now he has a wife. And Paul addresses this later. There's responsibilities with the wife. But part of this is that we have responsibility to one another to be affectionate. And I love it that Paul puts that first. Then he goes on to say, do not deprive one another except with consent for that time. Now, he says that because in verse 4, he says the wife does not have authority over her own body, but the husband does. And likewise, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but the wife does. Now, that is powerful. It can be misused. A husband can be abusive with that. But that's not the nature of Christ. You can take any truth and the flesh can cause it to be a problem or an issue. What he's simply saying is that I don't belong to myself. I belong to my wife. My wife does not belong to herself. She belongs to me, talking about her body. We could say we belong to God first and then to each other. Now, the idea of being affectionate and good service and being kind towards them is to be aware there's times when the husband has to be very much aware of that of his wife. She does not have the strength and the stamina that he has, so he's affectionate toward that. But it says to the wife that she cannot punish her husband by withholding her body from her husband, or the husband in the same way must give of himself. I know there are marriages that use this to punish one another. And there are marriages who haven't been together sexually in months. It's wrong. And Paul is not putting any kind of undue pressure. He's saying, look at what needs to be healed in your heart. What needs to be turned in your heart, affection towards one another. And that whole idea of serving kindness and affection towards another is a big teaching within itself, because that's where the tenderness and the openness and the intimacy starts first. And then it works out into this area that, wait a minute, I don't even have authority over my own body. It's for a man to think that he cannot satisfy himself, and a woman cannot withhold herself. It is to be mutually together. And he says, why? Because if you deprive, he said, don't deprive yourself except for a time of prayer and fasting. Let me read this, verse 5. Do not deprive one another except with consent. That means together, being in agreement with this. So do not deprive one another except with consent for a time, that you may give yourself to fasting and prayer and come together again, so that Satan does not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. Now, he's aware of sexual temptation. And he's saying in a marriage that the sexual relationship ought to be a regular part, and that there's not even to be a separation in that except for mutual consent. That's agreement. And then it can be for prayer and fasting. But then he says, I'm not even giving this as a command. I'm just giving this as a concession. I'm aware that there are times and seasons, but you need to be in agreement with it. And that's what he's referring to. He says, but verse 6, but I say this as a concession, not as a commandment. So he's saying, I'm not even saying as a commandment that you're supposed to separate for prayer and fasting and not to be together sexually. No, he just said it's okay if that's what you do, as long as you're in agreement. For he says in verse 7, for I wish that all men were even as I myself, but each one has his own gift from God, one in this manner and another in that. Now he's going to address singleness in marriage coming up here real soon, but here he's saying, I wish that everyone was even as myself. Now we know that Paul probably, for every reason, was married, because you could not be in the Sanhedrin and not be married. And we know he was in the Sanhedrin. So for whatever reason, the Bible doesn't speak of his wife. Either she left him when he was converted, and he would support that later. You're going to see that even in this chapter, if the unbeliever leaves, then they're free. I don't know that that happened with Paul. She may have died. We don't know. The Bible doesn't even tell us. The book of Acts doesn't even include that. But for all the reasons, it's believed that Paul was married, because the Jews felt so strongly about it, because they believed, because what the scripture says, that it's not good for a man to be alone, that was God's command for them to be married. So Paul's straightening that out, but there was a belief among the Jews that a man, for him to be holy, needed to be married. They wanted to see the continuation, of course, of offspring throughout the earth. So they saw the value of it. And I do believe that the normal state of a man and woman is marriage. That's what God created. But there are gifts that are given. Like Paul said, for I wish that all men were even myself. Now, I believe you're going to understand that later when he says in verse 26, because of this present crisis. I don't think it's a normal state. I don't think he's against marriage, but because of the present crisis. That present crisis was the persecution under Nero. We're going to talk about that later. But here he says, for I wish that all men were even as I myself, but each one has his own gift from God, and one in this manner, another in that. It's okay for wherever you are. It is a gift. Some people have a gift of singleness. Most do not, but some do. Verse 8 says, but I say to the unmarried and to the widows, it is good for them if they remain even as I am. But if they cannot exercise self-control, let them marry, for it is better to marry than to burn with passion. That's that burn with passion verse that we've all known about. So he is recognizing sexual drive, healthy sexual drive. He's saying it is better for them to be in marriage, that marriage does meet that need. Now, I want to tell you, marriage does not take away lust or inappropriate sexual drivenness. It doesn't. In fact, every couple and every man will tell you that they didn't get help just because they got married. Marriage does not cure sin. Marriage does not cure sexual lust. True sexual appetite that God has given may not be the same for someone once they get free from lust, because they may no longer be driven but have a true desire for their spouse in a healthy way, rather than a drivenness that they have developed over years before marriage. So Paul is not saying that marriage cures lust. What he's saying is there is a true healthy desire, and it would be better for you to get married than to be burning in passion in this way. Well, I love the scriptures because it speaks so directly to real issues. Thank you for joining us today in the Word.